This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. Did you know that olive oil is at its peak of flavor and nutrition right after it's fresh pressed at harvest time? That's why my favorite olive oil is delivered to me direct from the latest harvest, thanks to the Fresh Pressed Olive Oil Club. And now you can try a bottle yourself, normally $39, for just $1, with no obligation to buy anything else. Visit myfavoriteoliveoil.com. In my case, it truly is. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. MyFavoriteOliveOil.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I'm very much looking forward to talking to today's guest because she's the author of a fantastic book called Unsafe at Any Meal, What the FDA Does Not Want You to Know About the Foods You Eat. And there's a picture of just a big pile of greasy junk food on the cover, a hamburger, pizza, chicken nuggets, gooey dessert. And the author is Dr. Rene Dufaux, who's our guest today. For listeners who are looking to spell that name, it's D-U-F-A-U-L-T, Dr. Rene Dufaux. Welcome to the program. It's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Dufaux.
Well, thank you for having me, Dr. Hoffman. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
And by way of background, Dr. Dufaux, you have a BS degree in environmental policy analysis and a doctorate in health education, and you've worked for the National Institutes of Health, the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Food and Drug Administration. And in a moment, we'll talk a little bit about your history with the EPA. But first, intriguing title of the book, because it echoes the title of a very landmark book. I guess it was written in the 60s or the 70s, Unsafe at Any Speed by Ralph Nader. He's still knocking around, making noise about consumer empowerment when it comes to unsafe products. His book originally was about bad cars. Your book is about bad food. And so what was your intention in echoing and emulating Ralph Nader?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't choose the title for the book.
So but often I was happens, fine yeah. with it.
But it's an appropriate title. The real problem is that we have a processed food problem in our country, all over the world. And it's all about shelf life and what it is that manufacturers put in the processed food. And it doesn't, we can talk organic or conventional, it doesn't matter. There's just so much in processed food that now we're finding is not so healthy for you. And they talk about processed food, but they don't tell you what's in the ingredients that make it so harmful. So my book was intended to explain to the consumer what it is in the ingredients that we find in processed food that creates conditions for diabetes, heart disease, autism, ADHD, and so on.
So you really shine a light on some of the hidden perils in our processed food. But recently, there was a story that got wide circulation, and here's one of the headlines about this study. Processed foods lead to weight gain, but it's about more than calories. Yeah, we think of processed foods, laden with sugar and fat. They're high calorie, they're bereft of nutritional value. But there's more to it than just the caloric impact of these foods, right?
Right, because there are contaminants in processed food that impact the way our genes behave. So whether we're talking inorganic mercury, lead, pesticides, these contaminants in the processed food are really the real culprits. So the discussion of fats, they talk about, fats. Well, what kind of fats? What are we talking about? Well, vegetable oils of all kinds are at some degree a risk of inorganic mercury contamination. And we know this because the oil industry in Europe did a published a report, and you know they went through their various processes and wrote a report about the potential risk from low to high of inorganic mercury in vegetable oil. So, you know, we talk about fat, but we don't talk about what's in the fat.
Right. And we're going to do a deep dive on how it is that some of these contaminants, some of these ingredients, make their way into our food supply, and often undisclosed, because, you know, we can read labels, we can say, okay, this has got this amount of calories, the fat content is displayed, the sugar, carbohydrate content, so, you know, a consumer can read a label, but when it's not even disclosed, that's a problem. But before we get to that, I want to talk to you about your background, because you actually, you know, you're not just someone casting stones at the establishment from outside. You were literally in the belly of the beast. You worked for the FDA, and you did studies, and there came a time where your studies actually, well, they said thank you very much, but we're not interested in disseminating your work. Can you talk a little bit about your experience there?
Right. Well, I had inadvertently stumbled on finding inorganic mercury in corn sweeteners and products that contain corn sweeteners, and
high fructose corn syrup specifically.
Right, right, and of course, there's a lot of different corn sweeteners in that chain, in that product train, because you start with cornstarch, where they and now since I retired, I found out they actually apply inorganic mercury, mercuric chloride, to the cornstarch at the front end of the process. And then you end up with high fructose corn syrup, but you have all these corn sweeteners in between, you know, dextrose and, you know, so forth. So, and regular corn syrup and cornstarch and this and that. Well, the problem is that, then they all also were using mercury grade, sodium hydroxide and HCl in their process as well. And so mercury grade by definition means they made these chemicals with mercury. And so there's always, they've never figured out how to take the mercury out of these end chemicals. So they would use those mercury grade chemicals on purpose because it led to higher shelf life, which I found through my investigations at FDA.
So they said, instead of saying, you know, mercury's toxic, you know, we got to get it out of there, they said, well, you know, I guess it's all the same because the little bit of mercury that's in there, that can actually, it's like mercurochrome. It's what, when we were kids, you know, we skinned our knee and they would put a little mercurochrome, which is a mercury compound, on our knee. It's an antibacterial. It actually suppresses the growth of bacteria.
Well, that's no longer legal because now we know that even small amounts of mercury, inorganic mercury, can impact child development. So, you know, when they made mercurochrome, when they took that off the market, they didn't know about all these other problems that inorganic mercury can cause over time. Like, for example, we did a clinical trial where we educated a group of people that on what's in processed foods, and we tracked their dietary intake over, you know, 8-10 weeks. It was 10 weeks. And we also drew their blood at the front end of the study, and we had a chemist who had already developed methods for inorganic mercury analysis for the hazardous waste program at EPA. We had him develop a method to find the inorganic mercury in the blood, which is different than whole mercury, right? Mm-hmm. It's a certain, you know, species. So what we found was that the more processed foods people ate, the higher their inorganic mercury levels, and the higher their fasting glucose levels. Mm-hmm. So there was a direct connection between, you know, diabetes risk.
And why should that be? I can think it through myself, but for our listening audience, what could be the connection? I mean, there's no caloric value to mercury. Mercury, you know, doesn't deliver glucose into the bloodstream. By what mechanism could mercury mess up metabolism?
Well, it can suppress or turn on certain genes that have to do with metabolism. And there's a number of different genes, glucose transporter genes and so forth. So, that's the crux of the matter. And that same type of mechanism would be effective in Alzheimer's or any of the Western diseases. Mm-hmm. So Western diet leads to Western disease, and now we know why. We don't know exactly why in all cases, because there could be a number of genes that are impacted mm-hmm. by inorganic mercury or lead or organophosphate pesticides, right?
Which are also part of the, we're not going to just focus on mercury. We'll talk about a wide range of potential toxins. But Dr. Defoe, you know, I test patients in my practice for mercury. Many integrative doctors test for heavy metals, lead, mercury, cadmium, arsenic, and so on. And the vast majority of my patients come up with some mercury. And so the question I ask them is, do you eat a lot of seafood? You know, the classic seafood that delivers high amounts of mercury, shark, tuna, Chilean sea bass. These are certain species, swordfish. These are species of fish that concentrate mercury in their flesh, and therefore it suggests that pregnant women don't consume a lot of these things because of the risk to the fetus. So many of these patients say, well, I don't eat any of those fish. And so where are they getting their mercury from? And your research suggests that it's not from fish. It's ubiquitous in the food chain.
Right. And the thing is that when you ask a clinical lab to do a mercury analysis, the industry and clinical laboratory technology is doing total mercury. So they don't break it down to methyl mercury or organic mercury, mm-hmm. ethyl methyl mercury.
Which is worse, the organic or the inorganic, because it's the
right.
So
you get a full yeah. But CDC has actually licensed the method that we developed look for inorganic mercury. So, you know, I mean, the powers that be know what's going on, but there's no political will to interfere with the way that food is produced and manufactured and sold in our country. So we don't get warning labels on foods that could contain low levels of lead or mercury, or sometimes even higher levels. But there are places that they do have warning labels, not on foods that we know that, like food colors, certain food colors cause hyperactivity and inattention in children. So European Union requires food warning labels on all foods that contain certain food colors known to cause these conditions. Mm-hmm. And so as a result, over the last 10 years since they started requiring these levels, if you look at the autism and ADHD prevalence in that time period with comparable studies, same, you know, age groups and everything, we now see a huge difference. We see that, you know, in the USA, children diagnosed with ADHD, it's 9.4% of the kids, yeah. Whereas in the UK, it's 1.5%. Mm. And then with autism in 8-year-old boys, in the same time period, 11 out of 1,000 in the USA are afflicted with autism, where in the UK it's only 4. So these particular food colors have allowable levels of lead, up to 10 parts per million, and allowable levels of mercury. So, you know, the label doesn't say, watch out, lead and mercury in there, but it does say, watch out, this product can cause inattention and hyperactivity. So, you know, this is a problem. We have a real big problem in our society.
Take us through the history of high fructose corn syrup. You know, a lot of people feel like, well, you know, it's a natural sweetener. It's been around from time immemorial. But actually, there's a dramatic change in Americans' dietary patterns that dates back to around just 1970, you know, within our lifetime, certainly, where there was a sea change in the consumption of sugar. I mean, look, when I was a kid, I had sugar, but it wasn't sourced from high fructose corn syrup, right?
Right. Yeah, what happened was the Japanese figured out how to make corn sweetener out of corn, and it's a distillery process. It's kind of like making gasoline out of crude oil. So, you know, it's a chemical process. Big
if nothing plant. Else, we have a surfeit of corn in this country. We don't know what to do with it
right.
anymore. We turn it into gasohol. You know, we turn
it into
industrial plastics. You know, we have a surfeit of this product, and we can make it even more profitable by transforming it into high fructose corn syrup.
Right. And that's because the agricultural industry is subsidized by the federal government. So farmers get paid to grow that corn. And, you know, it's all related to what's going on today. I mean, GMO corn, GMO wheat, GMO soy, all these things are products that China doesn't want, Europe doesn't want. So, yeah, the farmers are, we have these big trade impasses going on, and Trump's trying to get these countries to buy our agricultural products, and they don't want them. So, and that's a side note, but the bottom line is, high fructose corn syrup came onto our market in the 70s. Very little of it until around the 80s is when it was just in everything. But the per capita consumption, in 1970 was like 0.3 pounds per year of high fructose corn syrup. And then by 2014, it was 26.8 pounds per year per person. So the percent increase from 70 to 2014 was like 8,833%, you know, and so people
over
were still eating.
8,000% increase.
Right, mm-hmm. increase. Mm-hmm. So the kind of sugar that we, and then we were still eating cane and beet sugar, the old, you know, mm-hmm. the other kind of mm-hmm. sugar. But there was less intake of cane and beet sugar and more intake of the other. So, in fact, the decrease was, there was a overall decrease in cane and beet sugar for that same period, like almost 33% decrease.
Right.
So,
well, that's, you know, has to do with, you know, our trade with Cuba. Cuba used to be our source for a lot of sugar. And then we became, you know, more self-reliant. You know, we make it ourselves in the fields in Iowa and Nebraska. And converted into
corn.
Sweetener.
That's where the corn. Because Hawaii doesn't do sugar anymore. Cuba, we don't get sugar from Cuba. So, mm-hmm. you know, the whole sweetener industry shifted to corn syrup.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so it's been posited that that's been very bad for Americans. I've seen studies that correlate the obesity epidemic to the introduction of high fructose corn syrup. And the idea being is that it's somehow worse than even regular sugar. Certainly it's ubiquitous. It's in soda. We consume lots more of it. But it's not even about quantity. It's about the quality of the high fructose corn syrup. The type of carbohydrates that it delivers are somehow more pernicious because you don't even have insulin control on it and blah, blah, blah. And it gets into the liver and it is deposited as fat, creating fatty liver. But what you're saying is there's yet another problem associated with high fructose corn syrup, which is not just the caloric assault on our systems, but the toxicity that it's a Trojan horse for. It becomes a Trojan horse for compounds like mercury.
Well, not only that, but USDA, United States Department of Agriculture, scientists actually did a study early on about high fructose corn syrup consumption in adult males, humans. And they found that the consumption of fructose compared to regular sucrose sugar led to magnesium loss in these men. So I mean, there's different issues associated with high fructose corn syrup, not just potential contaminants or whether or not mm-hmm. it's genetically modified or whatever. You know, the fact is we know that magnesium is a requirement in our for healthy diet, and low magnesium is associated with diabetes. So the actual mechanism, there's probably more than one mechanism mm-hmm. for getting diabetes, but we just, you know, we don't know enough to there's just the right kind of research isn't being done, frankly, and it's not supported by the powers that be in the U.S., but there's other countries that are doing research, and, you know, the fact that other countries don't want to have our diet, I mean, that's testament that, you know, we need to look beyond what's going on here and look elsewhere for valid data.
So what you're saying, in essence, is it's not just the background mercury that's in our atmosphere and in the soil that's around because of, you know, basically coal burning. Coal is certainly a source of mercury. Mercury goes up the smokestacks. It goes into the clouds. It's deposited in the environment. You're saying that actually intentionally, as part of the processing of these foods. Mercury is used, what, as a bleaching agent or some sort of processing agent?
In the flour used to bleach, they bleach flour. So they use a chlorine used to bleach flour. And the chlorine, it's an international standard, of course, which the U.S. adopted many years ago. The chlorine that you use to bleach flour has an allowable level of mercury because they make chlorine in a process that can use mercury.
As a catalyst, I guess, a chemical catalyst.
Yeah, right, okay. Right. Yep. So you know, white bread does not, that's been bleached, will stay on your shelf for a long time because of the mercury residue. Mm. However, if you buy organic, unbleached bread, you're going to have to leave it in your refrigerator.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it'll get moldy, see? So, yes, there's intentional use of specific chemicals with specific residues, just like we intentionally leave pesticide residue on vegetables and so on. Even organic vegetables, there's acceptable pesticides that you can leave on there. They can be bleached or whatever in order to get the product to the market in good shape, good enough to last a few days before, things start to go bad.
Right, so shelf life over human life is a major consideration by some of these conglomerates, transnational companies.
Totally. That's what it's all about. It's always been about shelf life.
Indeed.
So that's the problem. And so what we have to do is change the way we do our food locally. You know, we have the farmer markets and so on, but we really need to go back to gardening, to canning, if we really want to have safe food to eat.
Well, it was interesting, too, that, you know, a couple of weeks ago an article came out that, you know, there's this controversy over, you know, what to eat to prevent diabetes and to lose weight. And the study didn't look at the, you know, a very low-fat diet, didn't look at a very low-carb diet. All it asked for is that people locally source their food and not eat any food that's processed with unpronounceable ingredients that they obtained from a supermarket. Maybe they could get some organic produce at the supermarket, but not packaged goods. And what ended up happening is quite fascinating. People lost a lot of weight, you know, 8-10 pounds during a short period of time. I think it was 6 weeks. And they were much better in terms of many metabolic parameters. And it wasn't about reducing their carbs, and it wasn't about reducing their fat. They ate the same amount of food, but just was locally sourced. So you really may be onto something there.
Yeah, totally. That makes perfect sense.
Indeed. All right. We covered the issue of mercury. We're going to continue on the subject of this new book, which is great. I recommend it very highly. It's a practical book. It's an easy read. It's got all the information you need to safeguard yourself and your family. The subtitle, Unsafe at Any Meal, What the FDA Does Not Want You to Know About the Foods You Eat. And there's some practical suggestions there that we're going to get into in part two with today's guest, Dr. Renee Dufault. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.